Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
I've called, like, all the morgues and the police department. I never thought that he was hiding out, because there's never been a time where he's never contacted me. So once I realized, okay, wait a minute, something is wrong. Like I said, it was such a whirlwind. I was trying to buy a house and moving to another state. Those couple of months were just really chaotic. And so once I kind of realized, oh my gosh, I haven't heard from him, I knew something was wrong instantly. Because never in his 26 years has he ever gone without contacting me. How does someone just disappear? I don't think that he's alive. I still have hope, but I don't think that my mom's intuition says that he's not.
On May 10th, 2020, 25-year-old Skylar Ware wished his mom a happy Mother's Day. He was in Kansas City, Missouri, and she was in Florida, moving to a new home. So the two didn't see each other often, but kept in frequent contact. But this is the last time Skylar's mother would ever hear from her only child ever again, and his posts on social media stopped soon after, leaving everyone to wonder what had happened to him. Nearly a year later, with no leads, they're still wondering, and Skylar is still missing. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 279 of The Vanished, Skylar Ware's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Whether you're new to the show or have been listening for a long time, the stories you hear each week are about people whose lives culminated in their disappearance, likely with a tragic ending. The people whose stories we tell are people that could have been our own friends, neighbors, parents, or children. We don't just tell the story of the missing person, though. Missing person stories encompass entire communities of people, all of whom are victimized by the loss of a loved one without a resolution. Today's story is no different. This is a story of an imperfect young man who made choices that we may find difficult to relate to, or understand, or empathize with. But it's the story of a young man whose beautiful but deeply conflicted soul impacted many, who has so many people who love him and deserves to be found just as much as every other missing person. This is also the story of those who did their best to save him from himself, and now live each day not knowing how the story ends, or what to tell the young ones who aren't old enough to understand. We hope that you'll come along with us as we dive into this episode. And remember the tragic loss of the person at the center of this case, as he lost himself first, and likely his life when he disappeared. At the time Skylar disappeared in May 2020, it was already a miracle that the 25-year-old was still alive. He had been using drugs for years, starting with marijuana as a teenager, probably to alleviate the symptoms of his mental health disorders. Skylar loved music, creating, and producing. And the world of music came with the pressure to use other, harder drugs. He'd battled his own internal anxieties and terrors for years, sometimes engaging in suicidal thoughts and actions that ended in hospitalization or rehab. Skylar often turned to music to express his inner struggles, and you can hear that in his lyrics.
Can you tell me what is the problem? What am I doing? I don't know. There's a time to change and I will follow. Where am I going? I don't know.
Skylar's life had hit what most would consider rock bottom, with his loved ones practicing love from a distance and working to support him without enabling. And that's where things stood when he vanished. And while any one or combination of the factors in his life could have led to his disappearance, it's impossible to know exactly what the cause was. So when we began researching this story, we wanted to begin with the events that took place shortly before Skylar disappeared and work our way back through his history. We spoke with Sandra, Skylar's mom, who had received the message from him wishing her a happy Mother's Day on May 10th, 2020. And then she never heard from her son again. We asked her to tell us what was going on in Skylar's life prior to his disappearance.
He was with, you can't even call him friends, but so he was living in downtown Kansas City. What he had told me was it was like a 50-something-year-old man. So Skylar did music, and this was a local rapper. So he was living with this man, the man's girlfriend and her children. Pretty sure that this man was having Skylar run drugs for him, but, you know, I don't have proof of that, but pretty sure that's what was going on there. Music was everything. It consumed him. When he would take a break from the music, he did well, but it's like music was just, it was not a good thing for him. Because then he'd get so caught up in, you know, the scene and the behaviors, and he wanted to make it big in the music business. Skylar was around whoever would pay attention to him, because as handsome as he is and musically talented and intelligent and all the wonderful things that he has such low self-worth. And so whoever was nice to him and wanted to be around him, that's who he was around. And so that was until Mother's Day weekend. On Mother's Day weekend, he messaged me and told me that they had gotten kicked out. I guess the man and the woman had a fight and she kicked everybody out. And so he went and stayed in a motel. And that's the last I heard from him, was on Mother's Day. The text messages were, you know, just kind of filling me in on what had happened and him staying at the motel. And he said, but don't worry, I have money, you know, it's okay. And then he had gotten a tattoo on his neck that said Mama and had a heart under it that said, I love you. And he sent me a picture of that tattoo and a message saying, you're my everything. You're my mom, my dad, my best friend. And now you're moving far away, because I was in Florida that weekend buying a house. And then he called me on Mother's Day, you know, to say, I love you and happy Mother's Day.
Skylar had been living in various places for several years after having left his mother's home when he turned 18, though he often returned when he didn't have anywhere to go. Sandra, a licensed therapist, had come to a point in her life as a parent where she needed to practice some physical separation from Skylar, her only child, who was well into adulthood, but couldn't seem to find a way to thrive independently as an adult. We asked Sandra how Skylar felt about her moving to Florida.
He was upset that I was moving. He'd never ask if he could come with me, but in the messages he sent me, he asked if he could come and visit me, and I said, of course, and he asked if he could help me move, and I said, of course. Skylar's very codependent on me, and I mean, part of that is my fault. I enabled him for a lot of years, but very codependent on me. He never would go more than a week or so without talking to me. And good, bad, and ugly, I was always there. You know, if he was in jail, he knew he could call me. If he was high and needed something, he could call me. If he needed to go to treatment, he could call me. Well, I never completely cut him off. The rule was if he needed help, I would always be there to help him. And if he needed to stay with me, as long as he was sober, he could stay with me. But he had to be sober and he had to be on his medication. And he just got so far gone that he couldn't stay sober. He didn't want to stay sober. you know, that's when he started staying like in the homeless shelter and anywhere and everywhere because he was not willing to give up the drugs, even the marijuana, you know. I'm like, I'm a drug counselor. You can't smoke weed and live in my house. That's not okay. It's not legal yet. And so he said, I'd rather be on the street than give it up. I had boundaries, but I never like gave up. I never stopped helping him. I just had to do it from a distance.
Sondra didn't hear from Skylar after the first part of May, and his dad Charles hadn't heard from Skylar since April, when he received a call from his own brother. We also spoke to Charles, who lives in California, and he told us what he knew was going on in Skylar's life in those weeks and months just prior to his disappearance.
So that was, let's see, September, October, he went to L.A. After he got done with rehab, he went to L.A. He was there in November, December-ish, had an overdose. He overdosed there, was in ICU. Sondra did call me about that. She said, just to let you know, your son's in ICU. I said, okay, well, I'll go down there. I went down there and he was nowhere to be found. I couldn't find him. But they did tell me that, yeah, they had a male, a black male around that age, around that, you know, body type that was here. That's all they gave me. So I went down to, you know, Skid Row to go see if I could find him, which for me was extremely scary. But I did not find him. I spent only 2 hours, you know, but I could not find him. No one knew anything about him. And so I came back here. And then he had called me in February. And he said, and then, you know, he's like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to come out? You're going to come out and see me and do something about it? Oh, you don't do that because you didn't do it when I was younger. I mean, he was angry. I was the worst person in the world. How could I do this to him? How could, you know, I've never been there for him in his whole entire life. You know, the whole gamut of things. And so I just said, hey, I got to do what I got to do. And, you know, I'm here. I'm still here. If you still need me, I'll come down and come get you. Whatever you need, I'll do whatever you need me to do. But you have to do something. You can't just call and complain and be mad at me. So what are you really mad about? He says those things that really are bothering him, which I'm more than open to talking about. And I want those things to come out. You know, so I'm egging him on a little bit to get some of that stuff to come out so that maybe it'll, once it comes out, that he can calm himself down. But he just kept going on and on. And I just said, I can't do this. I'm not going to talk to you. Just call me when you're not doing that. That was the last time I had talked to him. That was the last time I actually talked to him. And then the last time I knew anything about where he was when my brother called me in April and told me he was looking for a place to stay. And that was in Missouri. So how you got back from here to there, I do believe, if I remember correctly, that I sent him back to Missouri. He had called and said I needed to go back to Missouri because I want to go to court and I want to take care of all this stuff. So I had sent him back on Greyhound. When I sent him back, I never knew if that's the last time I'm going to see him. Is he going to make it through? You know, what's going to happen?
At this time, Skylar didn't have a cell phone, or at least he didn't have one with service, which has been an obstacle in finding out what may have happened to him when he stopped contacting anyone and no one could contact him. Charles told us that he did buy Skylar a phone when he returned to Missouri, but he isn't sure what happened to it.
I bought him a cell phone, I think when he got back to Missouri and was with his mom for that little bit of time. I know she went and got it from Walmart or wherever, and then I remember paying her for it and then putting minutes on it. I know I did that a couple times. So he had a cell phone that I know that was active. But they lose them so often, though. And they're drug addicts. And so who knows if it's stolen, if it's exchanged, if it's lost. Skylar would not go an extended amount of time without contacting me for something, for advice, for money. He called me for a lot of advice, at least monthly. You know, I want to do cryptocurrency and how do I invest in that? And it's like, well, you owe money, so you can't invest anything. So you got to pay your stuff off first. But, you know, questions like that. Skylar would not go longer than a month, you know, sometimes a couple of weeks without contacting me, text, email, Facebook, something. I've had no contact from him.
Sondra told us that at the time of his disappearance, Skylar did have a cell phone, but he didn't have service, and explained how he would get in touch with her.
He had a cell phone, but no service. He didn't have a phone with service even when he was in California, because gosh, it had been a couple years before he, at least a couple years ago, that he, prior to going to California, he had a girlfriend and they did okay for a while. And he decided that he was going to do his own phone plan. You know, he was being responsible. And so I took him off of mine. And so that didn't last very long, of course, his own plan, but he hasn't had a phone in a couple of years. So the only way he would communicate with me would be whenever he'd go somewhere that had free Wi-Fi. So he had a phone, but no plan. When he got kicked out, I'm guessing he took his belongings and the phone would have been with him because he continued to message me, but we don't know where anything's at. We don't know where he's at, the phone's at, his stuff. We don't know anything. But if he didn't have service, there's nothing to ping.
Charles didn't see or hear from Skylar after this time, but Skylar maintained frequent contact with his mother, Sandra. So it was out of character when he did stop calling after wishing her a happy Mother's Day. And though he had been upset that his mom was moving across the country, he'd also expressed his intent to visit and help with the moving process. So his mom was reassured by his future plans and didn't worry too much when she didn't hear from him for a few days. As she told us, she was focusing on her own life and rebuilding in a new community.
2 days later, after Mother's Day, was my birthday, and he never messaged from me. I never heard from him, and I thought that was odd. So I sent him a couple of messages. He never responded. And so for the next month, I mean, I'm in the process of buying a house in another state during a pandemic. So I was a little preoccupied, but, you know, I would text every once in a while saying, okay, it's been a while. Are you okay? I'm getting worried. And so then I move here, and I believe it was August that Landon reached out to me, and she said that she thought I needed to file a missing persons report. And I said, well, he's a grown man. I mean, if he doesn't want to talk to his mom, he has that right. Well, then she started doing some investigation work of her own. And she was told by that man that he lived with, the girlfriend of that man, that the word on the street was that he was shot and killed in a robbery drug deal gone bad in Blue Springs by someone named Chris. And so that next morning is when I filed the missing persons report, and they did a wellness check on the house, and they said they hadn't seen him in a couple of months, which is when they kicked him out in May. I never thought that he was hiding out, because there's never been a time where he's never contacted me. So once I realized, okay, wait a minute, something is wrong. Like I said, it was such a whirlwind. I was trying to buy a house and moving to another state. Those couple of months were just really chaotic. And so I knew something was wrong instantly, because never in his 26 years has he ever gone without contacting me.
Though they were no longer in a relationship, Landon and Skylar share a son together. And Landon had worked hard to ensure that Skylar had the opportunity to see and spend time with his son. She too had become concerned when Skylar seemed to vanish. He wasn't the type that could stay under the radar for long. And even a few months of silence wasn't a good sign. But the rumors Landon was hearing were even more disturbing. Unsure of what to do from so far away in Florida, Sandra called a friend of hers for some guidance on how to report Skylar missing.
So I have a friend who is a homicide detective for Kansas City, so I called him first to find out what I should do. And he gave me the number of who to call, because normally you have to be in person. But he gave me a number of the person to call, and he said that I need to make sure that I let them know that Skylar has bipolar, because that changes things, you know, when someone has mental illness. So I called the number, and I started the report. Of course, I told him, you know, that he had bipolar, and gave him the address and all of that, and the story that the girlfriend had said about him being shot and killed and all of that. He said that the first thing they do is they send somebody out to the house to do the wellness check. So they did that, and they called me afterwards. And it was the ex-girlfriend's house, not the current girlfriend of that 50-something-year-old man. She told the police the same story that the current girlfriend had said. And I mean, really, that's it. They never asked me for a photograph of Skylar. They never asked anything about, you know, hospitalizations or treatment. I mean, he didn't really ask a whole lot. But I mean, at that point, I'm not thinking clearly. I'm freaking out, you know. So I just thought that he was doing his job. He called a couple of times, that detective, to check in, you know, and say, hey, have you heard anything? I went through Skylar's Facebook and I found a couple of Chris's on there and I gave them the last names of the Chris's. And he did call me back about one of the Chris's has a unique name. And he called me back and said that the man is incarcerated, but I had done my own investigation work and it was the wrong one. There's one that, you know, is like in his 50s and then there's one that was in his 20s. So I told him, no, you need to look into the younger one. And I never heard anything back. And on the second Chris that I gave him, I never heard anything at all. I literally don't think they did anything except that wellness check.
You may remember the last story we covered from Kansas City, Missouri, Marina Bischoff, whose case was featured in episode 241 of the show. In Marina's case, the police had been the last to see her alive and still seemed to do nothing. In fact, when we contacted them for an interview, they told us that they didn't think our listeners would be interested in anything they had to say. Was the apparent lack of interest the case with Skylar's disappearance also? It's hard to know, and we'll return to the law enforcement investigation later in the episode. But first, we need to focus our attention on Skylar's life. How did he get to a point where no one could find him? And the police didn't seem to have any interest in locating him. It's a complex and unique story, so stick with us. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Skylar was born in 1994 to his parents Charles and Sandra. Their relationship ended early in Skylar's life, but they were committed to raising Skylar together. Skylar's dad, Charles, is the one who initially reached out to us about covering Skylar's story, and he told us about Skylar's life.
Like most kids, you know, a great kid. He's probably one of the most talented kids I'd have ever seen. Athletic-wise, I was a great athlete, and he was a better athlete at his age than I was at his age. I think that pressure got to him at some point in time. Just a lot of pressure from being excellent at athletics, in football and in baseball, kind of turned him away from playing those sports and led him to have some idle time. Growing up, he was a great child. Sandra and I both co-parented him. He was with her most of the time and with me a large percentage of the time. So I was an influence on him in his early ages. As he got older and I moved from Missouri to Las Vegas, Nevada, I lost most contact with him just simply because of the distance. And so I didn't see him as often. That was during his 11 to 12 year old, 13 year old age range around in there. And that's when he started getting in trouble. His personality is he's an entrepreneur. He has the gift of gab. He has the gift of charm and is great at making money.
Skylar had a vivacious, larger-than-life personality, and his parents doted on him. Sandra told us about her fondest memories of her son.
He's pretty awesome. He has a great heart and would do anything for anyone. He had a great childhood. He was happy and funny and silly, and he always did well in school. He played almost all of the sports, baseball, basketball, football, soccer. He did martial arts. He was just always very busy. He was fun, outgoing. He liked to be silly and tell jokes. He was friends with everyone. He was just a great kid. He was into music. So in the sixth grade in middle school, he got to start orchestra. I had him in piano lessons before that, but orchestra is where I think his love for music really kicked off. So he played the violin for school, and then he got into the guitar, and he's so musically talented. He can pick up any instrument, hear a song, and figure out how to play the song.
When Skylar was still fairly young, his dad remarried a woman named Hannah, a clinical psychologist, who at the time didn't have any children of her own. We were able to speak with Hannah about Skylar's life, and when we did, we started out by asking her what she remembers about first meeting Skylar.
I was 11. Early on, we lived probably about 10 minutes from Sandra, and when Skylar was 12 or 13, Skylar was a lot of fun then. He's very funny, kind of a jokester, and very respectful, athletic. He played several sports. I can remember early on, just shortly after meeting him, I would, after school, you know, come by a few days a week and pick him up, and he'd come run errands with me, or, you know, we'd go play sports or something. And we had picked up tennis for a little bit. And after a month or two, he goes, "Hey, Hannah, can we play a different sport?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm not really getting the hang of this tennis thing." And he goes, "No, you're pretty terrible. Like, can we play something you're a little better at?" But that was him. Yeah, we had a lot of, when he was with us, you know, because the time was shared, just a lot of laughter. He's a little jokester. I would definitely describe him as creative and inventive all the way through from the time he was, you know, from the time I met him when he was younger through adulthood. He was very creative. He was very talented, musically inclined. He picked up the guitar. I don't recall specifically what age he picked it up, but he got really, really good at it. He got interested in, like, producing.
Without question, Skylar was a very bright young man, and his future should have been filled with nothing but opportunity. However, while still in elementary school, Skylar began to display behaviors in the classroom and at home that were indicative of possible mental health challenges. When we spoke with his mom, she gave us some insight as to what was going on in Skylar's young life at that time.
He started having, I would say, behavioral issues. I mean, he behaved fine at home, but he started doing things like he would take my credit card whenever I was asleep, and he would buy a bunch of toys off of eBay. Like, he did had a baseball fundraiser, and he stole the money from that. So he started having that kind, like, impulsive behavior. It was age 10, so it would have been the fourth grade. The teachers called me in, and they had some concerns of him not being able to pay attention, and he was always fidgeting or messing with things in his desk. So, you know, you sit behind the desk and his hands would be like inside the desk and he'd be cutting paper or, you know, making things. Just, he could not be still. So they suggested that I go and have him tested. So I took him to a child psychologist and he tested positive for attention deficit disorder. He was put on medication. He was put on Adderall. It did improve. Yeah, he did really well. The only side effect is he couldn't really eat. He didn't have much of an appetite. So in the summers, I would take him off the medicine so he could, you know, gain some weight back. But he did well with it.
Skylar's dad, Charles, had already moved away from the Kansas City area by the time Skylar was diagnosed with ADHD. But he told us what he remembers about that time and how he had his own opinions about Skylar's treatment with medication.
I wasn't necessarily part of that whole transition like I would be now, because I just wasn't as informed. So I may have been against that. He definitely had ADHD. So he was diagnosed with ADHD, started taking Adderall. There was a change in his personality during that time, and a little bit of a change in his temperament as well. And then around age 11 and 12, he actually stole his mom's credit card and ordered his own Christmas gifts. So we knew that was an issue. So that's not common. You don't see that too often. And then one of the biggest catalysts, I think, and you know, and to be honest, I think this happens to a lot of children, and that is when you're left at home a long period of time. When I was still in the vicinity and in the proximity of him, I was able to get him after school or take him home to my house until his mom got home. And it became a point in time where I was unaware of what the schedule was at their house. And what it ended up being is that he did spend a lot of time either by himself or with other people that allowed him to go out and do things that he probably shouldn't have been doing.
This seemed to be a real turning point for Skylar, and he later confided in Charles that he had been victimized in the most horrific way during this part of his childhood.
He shared some stuff with me last year that I did not know, that there may have been some things that happened at the age of 8. And so he did give me some information that told me that I wasn't aware of until, like I said, last year, that he was sexually abused. And so it could have been that as the catalyst, because he also started taking Adderall at that time. And it was a downward spiral from then. I work, you know, directly in the field with children who are, I'm not a counselor or therapist, but I work on applied behavior change from the psychophysiology point of view. And so seeing the results of that as they get into, you know, from their elementary school years to the middle school years and then transitioning to adulthood, early adulthood, you can definitely tell that there's an effect. There's a chemical and hormonal effect from taking those drugs at an early age. You know, we classify addiction as when things go from a want to a need, then that's an addiction, right?
Charles was still living several states away from Skylar when he became a teen. But he remembers that Skylar did not like the effects of the ADHD medication and believes that's when he turned to his own methods of self-medicating.
He was really tired and he lost a lot of weight, you know, really lethargic at times. It took a lot to get him pumped up about life. I remember talking to him and he just was not there. He just was not there. He's a very lively, very energetic, quiet kid. He's ironically very quiet. See, he said, I like to eat and I like to have an appetite. You know, I don't want everyone to eat. And it just led to him not eating. He got so skinny. I remember he was just so thin. He did stop taking it. I don't remember when. It was still when he was in high school, you know, or 15, maybe, around in there. And then it just turned to weed. He just started smoking marijuana. But that also, he changed, you know, his personality changes. So when your personality changes and your thought process changes, smoking weed is a very minor offense. He wasn't an alcohol person. You know, he didn't drink that much. If ever, he might not have drank at all that I even remember us talking about, but it was always smoking marijuana. It was always doing methamphetamines. It was always doing heroin. He had done a couple other drugs too. Speed, of course, he was doing speed too. Ecstasy, he talked about doing ecstasy. That doesn't surprise me. He told me about the ecstasy parties that they used to have in his hometown.
Looking back, Skylar's parents are able to see his tendencies to gravitate toward addictive substances, most likely to alleviate symptoms of his mental health struggles that started fairly quickly after his first diagnosis of ADHD. Sandra told us how Skylar's addiction and destructive behavior continued to progress.
So he did not start anything until age 15, and then he started with marijuana and alcohol. I don't think alcohol too frequently, it was more the marijuana. He just said that the marijuana kind of leveled him out. And I mean, there has been a lot of research showing that marijuana does kind of stabilize people that have bipolar. So he never sold his medication because he had gotten off of it by the time he was 15 because he, you know, wanted to try to self-regulate on his own. But freshman year, so he would have been 14, that's when he first got in big trouble. So I had some stomach medicine. And he took that to school and gave it to a kid that sold drugs. He didn't even know what he was giving him. But anyway, the kid ended up getting into a fight that day and had the medicine on him. And that Skylar's the one that had given him the medicine. And so Skylar, he got kicked out of school and got referred to family court. So that's where it all went downhill. The experience in family court was really nothing. I had to take him to an interview And I don't know if it's because I had worked with the family court for so long. I ran a outpatient drug treatment program for adolescents, so I knew everybody. So I don't know if they gave him a chance because he was my son, or if they gave him a chance because it was his first time getting into trouble. But the court, they said nothing. You know, just I put him in a little diversion program, and that was the end of it. He did fine. It was run through the Blue Springs Police Department called CYOU, Community Youth Outreach Unit. And he was assigned a police officer to act like as his case manager. And then they did groups, and he also had a therapist there. And I mean, he did fine, but he does well when he's in high structure environments. So I would take him, you know, in the evenings, and he would do that. They made him do some community service. We had a family meeting.
Allegations of selling medication at school had landed Skylar in court for the first time when he was just 14. But his mom thought he was doing well following the court's plan for him, and that he may have simply needed that added structure in his life to thrive. And then, near the completion of Skylar's term in the family court program, things took a turn for the worse. Sandra told us more.
It wasn't until the very end that he had some, I don't even remember what had caused it, but I came home from work and he had given himself a piercing in his face, and I made him take it out. And he got mad and, you know, kind of started raising his voice at me. So he had group that night. So I took him in and we met with his police officer that was assigned to him. And the officer talked to him and I, and he said that whenever we got home, I was directed to take everything out of his room. You know, he needed to be punished for his behavior. So we got home and I started doing that. And Skylar told me, well, you're wasting your time because I'm just going to kill myself. And so that was his first trip to the psych hospital. They actually were not going to take him because once we got there, I mean, Skylar is, he knows how to sweet talk people. And he told them that he was just angry and he wasn't really going to hurt himself. And I had a private conversation in the hallway with the staff. And I said, you are going to keep him. Otherwise, I'm going to sue your hospital if I go home and my kid dies. He was 14. And so they kept him and he stayed. And, you know, that scared him. That scared him. He was crying a lot. And I went up for the family visit and he begged me to take him home and apologize. He was so sorry. But he stayed, I think, maybe 3 days. So whenever we came home, he was fine for a little bit. But because he had gotten kicked out of school, they sent him to the long-term suspension school, and things did not go well there. It's a bunch of kids that are in trouble and doing things that they shouldn't be doing.
Life did not improve for Skylar after his hospitalization. He met a young woman named Landon, who he would later have a son with, and the two of them engaged in destructive and harmful behaviors together. We asked Sandra to tell us more about their relationship.
So I think he was 16 when they met. They were together like 5 years, I think. When they got together, that's when he started using other things. You know, I don't know like if it was the first year or the second year because, you know, he did his best to hide it from me. But all I knew about was the marijuana because he didn't care about hiding that.
Sadly, Skylar's ongoing challenges with substances continue to control his life in ways that no one seemed able to reverse course on, and some of his behaviors only got progressively worse.
You know, he for a while was stealing a lot of things and selling them on Craigslist. I caught, I guess. His mom had called me and said, why did you buy him a new camera and a new cell phone? And I said, I didn't. And if I did, I wouldn't talk to you about it. She's like, well, he's got a cell phone and a camera. And I said, you better go check his room and see what's going on. So she went in his room when he was gone and pulled out his backpack. And there was a large knife in there. And there was a GPS unit and a camera and a phone, just a bunch of stuff. And so my assumption was, well, he probably stole it or, you know, something. He's in possession of it, obviously. I just happened to look on. I said, give me the name of one of those, the camera. Give me the name of the camera. So she told me what it was. I just typed it in Craigslist in their area. And up came this ad that said, for sale this camera for this amount of money. Meet me at the gas station on the corner of my house because I don't have a car. And it was his phone number. And so I said, he's stealing this stuff and selling it. physically. And then I do remember talking to him and asking him. And he said, this is what he told us, that he was the possessor and seller of that equipment. He was not the stealer. So they had a three-ring circus. One person would cop out where this equipment is. One person would steal it. They would give it to him, and he would post it, sell it, give them the money back of their cut.
Meanwhile, at home in Kansas City, Sondra hoped to use this incident as a teaching moment and hopefully scare Skylar into seeing what his future would be like if his criminal activity continued.
When Skylar was still in high school, so before he was 18 and moved out, I found random items like GPS, phones, just different electronics. And so I called the police and they came over, and there was probably, I don't know, like thousands of dollars worth of items. And they put him in handcuffs and did the good cop, bad cop, and then were going to be on their way. And I took one of the police officers outside and begged him to take my son to juvie so he could learn a lesson. And they didn't do anything about it. They said a detective would call me, and I never heard anything back. They took all of the merchandise and never did anything.
Sondra was trying to get Skylar the help that he so desperately needed. Between hospitals, rehabs, and begging the police to intervene, nothing seemed to be working. While Skylar may just seem like a troubled teen, he was battling a lot of inner demons. He often expressed himself through his music. While researching this story, I found one of Skylar's songs that he wrote around this time. Beneath the song, it says, "I wrote this song when I was just coming out of rehab for the first time at the age of 16. I was struggling with addiction and in a very dark place. My spirit was just drained. I sat down like I usually do, and this song poured out of me. You can really hear into the window of my soul in this one." Sondra continued to attempt to get Skylar on track, but there wasn't much she could do after he turned 18 and decided to move out with his then-girlfriend, Landon.
They were both still in school, so he lived at home until his 18th birthday, which was his senior year in high school, and he chose to stay at the alternative high school. He chose to not go back to high school after, you know, the suspension term was up. But his 18th birthday was September 12th, so he had only been in school less than a month, and that's the day he left. And he went to live with her and her sister and the sister's boyfriend, because she had graduated. She's a year older, so she had graduated the year before. He dropped out. He left on his 18th birthday, which is just 1 month into his senior year. He ended up going and getting his GED.
Skylar's dad, Charles, specializes in behavioral health today, but was still early in his career when Skylar was growing up. He recognizes that it's easy to look back now on the things he wished he had done when Skylar was a child. The ADHD diagnosis was only the first step in properly assessing Skylar's mental health, and several years later he received a second diagnosis. By this time, Skylar had a full-blown addiction to multiple substances. Charles shared more with us on that.
You know, he was diagnosed with bipolar depression. And so those two combinations, when he would call me and have, you know, a manic high or a manic low, it's that severe swing that sometimes I didn't know if it was drug induced, if it was lack of taking medication, you know, what was really going on. And you can't rationally ask individuals if they're drug addicts or if they're not on their medication, what's really going on, because their sense of reality is just not there. He has a good heart. He has good intention. He just loses his way because he gets so excited about something, thinking that that's the one thing. That's the one thing. That's the thing that's going to get me. I only need to do this one more time. I only need one more fix and then I'll be okay. I take my medication and I feel great, so I don't need to take it anymore. Not realizing that taking the medication allows them to feel great. You know, at the time, I was not as adverse to mental health as I am now. You know, I had to learn probably tenfold. My wife is a clinical psychologist, and so she's more well-versed. She would tell me these things. Well, this is what it sounds like. This is what it looks like. But she said, I'm not diagnosing him. His mom obviously works in the field as a therapist and a counselor and has done a great job of helping identify what she thought was going on, but we just didn't have the means to really effectively deal with it because of his behavior was so erratic and he was gone a lot.
This was not the life that Sandra and Charles had envisioned for their child. How could things go so terribly wrong when they provided their son with every opportunity and resource in life? Was it possible that they missed his cries for help in his erratic and often criminal behavior? But his downward spiral continued, and his battle with bipolar disorder seemed to be a losing one. Here's Sandra again.
He was pretty rapid cycling. He would have like 2 weeks of low lows, like very depressive states where he would talk about suicide and he wouldn't shower, he wouldn't take care of his hygiene, you know, he wouldn't want to leave his room. And then he would have a couple of weeks of just mania. And his mania was not always bad. A lot of times it was, he was very happy. He felt good about himself. He would clean his room. He would start projects. But then he started getting into the very risky kind of mania, which is, you know, the impulsivity, the drugs, taking up random girls, just putting himself in really dangerous situations. He saw a handful of therapists, psychiatrists, and then, of course, each hospital and treatment center would do their own thing. But yeah, I think for the most part, it was bipolar one. But then, you know, when he's using, they give him a substance use diagnosis. So, of course, he has lived with me on and off since he left at 18, you know, when life would happen or he'd get kicked out or whatever. He would come and stay with me. He never took his medicine unless he was living with me, because that was a rule, he had to take it. And when he was on his medicine, he would do well. I mean, he would smoke marijuana, but other than that, he didn't do the hardcore drugs. But once he slipped and he left my house, and I mean, he was doing everything. He's one of those addicts, when they ask what's your drug of choice, his answer is whatever's in front of me, because it literally didn't matter. He's done them all. He stayed away from me when he was using. But I mean, you could tell by looking at it. Weight loss. I mean, his face just looked horrible there for a while. He'd have like the meth sores on his face.
Skylar was barely an adult, and his family knew that something drastic would have to happen in order for his life to turn around. If you have someone in your life who has grappled with addiction, you're probably familiar with how much of a struggle it is for those around them. It can be difficult to figure out how to help. You try everything you can think of while also attempting to maintain boundaries and avoid enabling. The road to recovery is a bumpy one for most. It can leave loved ones feeling hopeless and helpless. Charles knew that Skylar was at the point in his addiction where he was doing things, sometimes illegal things, to pay for the drugs he was addicted to. However, he had no idea that Skylar's behavior was far worse than selling stolen items on the internet.
I got a phone call from my best friend, and he said, "What's your son up to?" And I said, I have no idea. You know, he's probably doing something, getting in trouble or something. He said, "Yeah, probably." He said, "You probably should look at the internet." And so I told Hannah, I was on the phone with him. I said, "Can you just type in Skylar's name on the internet?" And she typed it in, and the whole first page was all him. He had, you know, and I don't know if the results of this case has come out. I don't know if it's closed. I know that I was sending him back home to deal with it, but he had effectively been filming people in the dressing room. He told me about it. He said he was getting video to sell it so he could get paid.
It doesn't matter much what the reason was that Skylar had made the choice to record women, including a minor, in dressing rooms. The victims and their families were traumatized no less by the actions that Skylar considered to be entrepreneurial skills. There is absolutely no justification or excuse for this horrible crime. And I'd like to pause this story for a moment to stress that we strongly condemn the predatory behavior of invading anyone's privacy, especially in our most vulnerable moments when we trust that no one is looking. This type of crime is one that women fear being a victim of. We don't excuse or justify these actions in any way. It was July of 2015 when this occurred, and Skylar was 20 years old. He was charged with invasion of privacy. At this point in time, Skylar's life had clearly entered a dangerous path, with few opportunities to turn around. For Skylar's family, there was a brief moment where it seemed like that miraculous change was going to come, when Skylar and a woman he had started seeing left Missouri and headed west toward his dad's home in California. Charles shared this with us when we talked with him.
He started in Missouri. When he came out here, he was in L.A., L.A. County, around that area, and it just exacerbated it because he had more access to it. He had also brought a girl out here that apparently he met at a party, is what he told me. They hung out for a couple of weeks, and then he asked her, hey, you want to go out to California with me? And so they went to Wyoming. He worked at Yellowstone and hung out up there to follow his ex-girlfriend. And they did some things up there. And then he migrated down to California. When I told him, I said, I need to get you in rehab, man. We need to kick this habit that you got going on. Because he was wrecking his cars. He's had 6 or 7 cars and had wrecked them and then just would lie about what happened. And it's been unstable for 6, 7 years, probably. Between Missouri, Wyoming, you know, Yellowstone. Even there, he was bouncing around a lot. He worked at a couple places, but he had to stay with different people out there.
Skylar's life had so much potential to turn onto a positive course. He had gotten away from the negative influences he'd been surrounded by for so long in Kansas City, and was able to work, spend some time surrounded by the beauty of nature, and gain some much-needed life experience with some geographic distance between himself and his parents. But Skylar was in a toxic relationship with a young woman he'd gone to California with originally, and they were both using hard drugs by this time. But his dad and stepmom hoped that they could convince him to go to rehab and start the lifelong journey of recovery, half a continent away where they resided in California. Approximately 8 months prior to his disappearance, Skylar got on a bus headed for his dad and stepmom's home. Charles told us about this time in Skylar's life.
You know, he'd been in trouble in Missouri with this, you know, trespassing and this invasion of privacy stuff. And, you know, he went to Yellowstone and had gotten fired from his job and had gotten in a wreck up there and lost his license, which is like the third time he's lost his license. And just was at, I think he was at an end, you know, was looking for something. And so I said, you just come out here. Come out here and We'll figure it out. I said, the worst thing is you can go to rehab. The best thing is that you can stay in the house and we can self-treat you. You know, we can just figure something out. So I sent for him. I had him ride the Greyhound bus out. And so he came out in September of 2019 and was here for a week. And we agreed that he would go into rehab. I met a guy at Starbucks who ran a rehabilitation house that was funded by partly by the state and also by donations. Just happened to randomly meet him and told him my son was coming. And he said, I have a bed. If you're really telling me he's going to be here in 2 weeks, I'll leave that bed open for him and just call me when he gets here. And so I called him on Saturday and I said, he's here. He doesn't want to come yet. Maybe on Tuesday. He said, I'll see you on Tuesday morning. He was great. You know, the reason he didn't really want to go is because we were having such a great time. His and my relationship had been absent for so many years. He lost out on, you know, the lifestyle and the things that I have been able to achieve, and selectively deciding to leave Missouri and go to Las Vegas to create a lifestyle for myself and for everybody, really. And so we spent, you know, those last 2 days just talking about life. You know, and his most said thing during those 2 days was, I wish I would have known this when you were around. I wish I would have been able to have been taught this years earlier. And I said, some of these things I would not have known. I wasn't mature enough to teach you. And I didn't have the life experience and the maturity. But I do now, so I'm teaching you as quick as I can. And that's why he didn't want to go in. He was having a good time learning, you know, learning the truth about what was going on. And I think at that time, I found out who my biological mother was.
through a change in the state law. So I was able to get my resident birth certificate. And so we were talking about him having, you know, extended family now. Now that we know that I have a whole different biological family that's mostly still alive, including an older brother. So that was a positive impact and a positive thing for him to be part of. And then I have a 5-year-old son that we adopted when he was 3. And I mean, they just had a great time together. And my 5-year-old just adored him because he's like, I love having an older brother. And, you know, wants that connection because he came from a disenchanted family. We just spent time doing that. Skylar used to have these long dreadlocks that just, I told him when you come out, I said, you obviously have to change some things in order for you to survive. And I said, I'm not trying to change you as a person. But I said, there are some things that society wants to see from individuals just to be accepted. And I said, some of the things you just have to do. One thing is you need to cut your hair because people are going to see you a certain way. You got tattoos on your face. And then you have this long, dreaded, nasty hair. As long as you cut your hair and you can get styled, people may not even notice the tattoos on your face. He enjoyed it. I mean, he got his hair cut. He looked, I mean, he was proud to look like the old Skylar. I was proud of him for wanting to have that haircut, you know, and the barber talked to him. The barber was a former drug addict as well, which is one of the reasons why I chose that barber. And he set him down and had a talk with him. And, you know, I let them have it privately. I don't know what was said. I still don't know to this day. But he seemed to be very thankful and told me. I know he told me, thank you for taking me there and allowing me to talk to Barbara John. And I said, yeah, that's what life's about. You know, that's what we do.
Charles had learned to teach and wanted to be there to help Skylar change his life for the better. But he'd missed out on those crucial years when Skylar was growing up and arguably needed his dad the most. Skylar didn't seem too keen on going to rehab and told his dad it was because he liked staying at his dad and stepmom's home in California, where he had a younger brother to play with. But a few days later, he did end up going to a rehab facility.
So I took him down Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. That was hard. That one was hard for me. Because you just never know when. I know I've never been addicted to anything, but I have several people, of course, my son, addicted to drugs. And they've been to rehab 9, 10, 11 times. And it's just, you know, you sometimes you just don't know.
Charles took Skylar to rehab, hoping that the fresh haircut and a change of scenery in California would give him the best chances of starting a successful recovery while at the rehab facility. Unfortunately, things didn't go that well.
They can't communicate, so he's to give his cell phone up. And that was at like by 10 o'clock, and they let me actually go into the house. It's almost set up like a halfway house, but with rehabilitation and standards. Ultimately, long story short, Skylar texted me that night, on Tuesday night, and said, it's really weird here. From a phone he wasn't supposed to have. So clue number one is, how do you get your phone? What's going on with that? So I asked him, he said, oh, they let me keep it for 24 hours. You know, he made something up that was not true. And I said, okay, well, just give him back your phone because you're supposed to not have your phone. So let's just try to do this the way it's supposed to be done. He said, okay. On Thursday, he texted me and said, it's really weird here. They pray 6 times a day. And I said, from what I've seen you do and from what you told me, you pray 3 times a day. So what's the issue with praying 3 more times? Is it really that big of a deal? Well, no, I guess not. Okay. So stop looking for excuses and a reason and just do the program, man. Do the program. Saturday morning, he calls me and says, I left and I'm at the bus stop. Can you come get me? So he didn't even last a week. He said it was too strict. It was too religious. He didn't want, you know, he said that's what he wanted. And I said, Skylar, things happen in life for a reason. This is what you told me you wanted. And then the next day, I meet this guy at Starbucks. I said, this stuff just, you know, that's how life is. And so, although you may not like some of the requirements and circumstances in which you're under, it probably will help you. I would not have chosen something that I don't think is healthy for you or going to be helpful. And he does not, like most people, won't, if you're not paying for it or it's free, you don't understand the value of something. And I told him, I'm not disappointed in you. I'm not mad at you. It's not about the money. It's not about that you only lasted a few days. It is about effort. That's what it's about. That's always what I get upset with people about is effort. You know, you have to put forth effort. And then if it doesn't work out, then we can go back with another solution. But if you don't put forth effort, then it's not going to work. That's a fact. It's just how it is. And so he understood that. You know, I gave him the hard questions. What's the longest time you've had a job? I think we calculated 4.5 months. He understood that it was because of his inability to stay focused and because of drug use. When he was here, this is what's so devastating to me.
out of this whole situation. When he was here with me during that time, before he went to rehab, I saw what the potential of Skylar really was. I really did. I saw everything that was great about him come out during the time that he was here. Drugs just prevent people from accepting reality and learning how to deal with it and asking for help.
The conversation seemed productive, but Skylar's plans for the future were to return to living at his dad and stepmom's house, which they allowed, but with some ground rules. Primarily, Skylar was not allowed to smoke marijuana in the house or on the property. He ended up breaking this rule, and his dad ultimately asked him to leave. From there, Skylar got on a Greyhound bus to San Francisco, before heading back to Los Angeles and finally to Kansas City, where he disappeared. After that call to his mom on Mother's Day, Skylar had a small number of social media interactions over the next few days. But by mid-May, all indications that Skylar was alive and well were gone. Skylar's family had tried for years to help him find a way to live a healthy, sober life. But at this point, that didn't seem to be within realistic reach. When we talked with Hannah, who spoke to us as Skylar's stepmother but practices as a clinical psychologist, she shared with us some of her insights as to how her family had arrived at this point.
On one hand, okay, this is typical. Like at that point, he had a very transient lifestyle. And for me, it was typical to like go months without hearing from him and then he'd pop up. So it wasn't for me like a, oh my God, he's dead or something like that. It was like, okay, he just is in a spot. We can assume he needs help. I can assume that it's very likely he may not have intentionally disappeared, you know, due to mental health or substance issues. It's quite possible that he could be, you know, somewhere where he does need immediate medical attention, again, due to mental health or substance use issues. And then, of course, there are always the questions. And as a professional, like thinking about my own clientele in the past, you know, was there some incident with the police? So he went to hiding for a little bit just because of statistics, right? The mental health statistics, the substance using statistics, the groups that puts people with the mental health issues around and situations that they find themselves in. So yeah, I do think it's more likely that probably something happened to him. And so even though like with Skylar, I know statistically what the like most likely outcomes are at this point, there's always still hope. Like until you have facts, you just don't know what the outcome is. And so I think it makes the grieving process harder. It's incomplete, you know, the picture's incomplete.
We're left to wonder why Skylar never took the help that was always within his reach, or what his reasons were for not wanting those closest to him to support him when he needed it in a healthy manner that was focused on his long-term well-being and not enabling his behavior. Skylar's mom, Sandra, shared with us that he routinely sought her help as a therapist for those in his life, even while refusing to get help himself.
By this point, Skylar knew, you know, I was done with the enabling and all of that. So he didn't really ask me for anything, but having a mom that's a therapist, he kind of was in the habit of sending everybody who needed something to me. And so he would call me, being my child, of course, all the time. I'd get these random phone calls. Hey, mom, I'm with such and such and they need help. Can you help them?
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices in premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. As we mentioned earlier, we have seen law enforcement in the area where Skylar disappeared, not seeming to put much effort into looking for other missing people that we have covered. And when we reached out to them about Skylar, we received no response for months. It remains unclear what jurisdiction has Skylar's case, whether it's Kansas City or Jackson County. When we did receive an answer from the Jackson County Sheriff's Office, it was simply that they would not comment on an active investigation. While most places list Kansas City Police as the jurisdiction handling Skylar's case, the Kansas City Police Department never responded to any of our calls or emails. As of the date that this episode was recorded, Skylar still hadn't been added to the NamUs database. This is what Sandra told us about why she believes the police aren't looking for her son.
He made a name for himself, you know? He's a drug addict. Drug addicts do bad stuff. They were probably, like, good riddance. You know, we don't have to be bothered with him anymore, which is horrible because he's a human being. I mean, I think he was selling drugs. And so if you're caught up in that lifestyle, then yeah, that's definitely a possibility. The robbery, the, you know, getting killed, all of that. That's a possibility. I mean, it's a possibility that maybe he overdosed and died. You know, there were, I can't even tell you how many times I would get phone calls or messages from him saying, you know, I've got a needle in my arm. I'm getting ready to kill myself so you can finally be happy and done with me. And don't worry, nobody will ever find me. So I don't know. How does someone just disappear? He's on many different missing person sites. You know, my family members or who I can't even keep track of what everybody's done, but he's on a bunch of, like, throughout the country, missing persons. So it's not like only in the Kansas City area are people looking for him. You know, it's all over. So I don't understand. He has such identifiable tattoos and everything. So I don't know. I don't get it. His fingerprints were on file. I want him found because I can't grieve. I don't know what I'm grieving. You know, I don't know if he's alive, I don't know. So I'm in limbo, and it sucks. And it's getting harder, not easier.
Skylar's dad, Charles, shared with us how his perspective on what may have happened to Skylar has changed as time has continued to pass with no word from his son, or even the law enforcement agencies that are supposed to be looking for him.
So, you know, when I found out, you know, I was of course shocked, but I thought, well, you know, maybe he's hiding out and doesn't, you know, want to be found. So, or he could, you know, just be chilling, just kind of probably to clean out a little bit. And then that turned into 2 months, and then that turned into 3 months, and then that turned into 4 months. And then it turned into the same friend that asked me about, you know, told me about him getting in trouble when I first moved to California. Same friend said, hey, I saw this on, you know, Skylar's mom's Facebook page. What's going on with that? And what are you doing about it? And I said, if you were to look at it, I'm not doing anything about it. I'm not doing what I should be doing about it. And so that's when I started posting on my Facebook, because I had my Facebook closed down for a little while, and connected my network to what was going on. And, you know, I had hundreds of people repost that post, which was great. And then reached out to you. And thankfully, you know, you were able to help us out as well, which I appreciate, to get some awareness about what's really going on. You know, I know that some of the listeners and have been through this, where their child or a sibling or someone that their loved one has talked about, you know, suicide or has suicidal thoughts. Skylar too has had that. And it seemed like from what his mom had told me, there may be some of those things in his language when she saw him in May. He could have, and I could see him doing this, have overdosed simply because he wanted to have a high quantity of drugs in his system so he could not come back. And then he'd be unidentified. The rumor, of course, as you know, there was a drug deal that's gone bad and he was shot and killed. I do think that he's an unidentified overdose somewhere.
One of the most heartbreaking aspects of this story is that Skylar has a younger brother who was adopted by Charles and Hannah from the foster care system. Skylar's disappearance has been especially difficult for his little brother, who has seen so many people come and go in his short life.
You know, I have a 5-year-old in the house. He was found in a house with people smoking meth. He was sitting on the lap of some lady who was smoking meth. And when the police came to check, to do a well child check on another kid, they saw him and said, nope, this doesn't look right. And that's how he got into the foster care system.
Skylar's stepmom, Hannah, told us that even though he's young, Skylar's little brother has an understanding beyond his years of what it means when someone is missing, and that he and Skylar shared such a special relationship. He misses Skylar dearly.
Skylar was great with him. He was wonderful with him. Our youngest son, we adopted. He was placed with us for adoption 2 years ago, and he doesn't know his biological family. We adopted him through the foster care system. And so he had always talked about he wants brothers, you know, or sisters. He wants siblings. And so, and we were always very open with him that you do have both biological and you do have, you know, Skylar. But we were very cautious about allowing Skylar around him because of, you know, his unmanaged mental health issues and the substance use. But anyhow, so when he came to us, that was one of the rules was that you must be sober when you arrive. And you cannot use, if you use at any point when you're with us, then we're going to have to no longer allow you at the house. And so for those days, to our knowledge, he didn't use. There was no indication that he was using anything. He just stayed in his room and played the guitar a lot, sang a lot, which our youngest son loved. He's a big dancer, music enthusiast at 5. But yeah, he just loved. He loved having Skylar around. It was Skylar this, Skylar that. And Skylar was just really, I mean, I think because of Skylar has his own son that's about the same age. And he had not been able to see his own son in quite a while. So I think that played into it too, how he did seem to like cherish that time. He does ask, you know, when is Skylar coming? And it was actually the same day that Charles found out that Skylar was officially missing. Like no one had heard from him or that we knew of. There were no facts of his whereabouts. Charles was out of town and he had asked me just very randomly that day, hey, can you call Skylar and have him come visit us? And it was later that day I got the call from Charles saying that he was missing. Nobody had heard from him or seen him in months. So eventually we did sit down and just told him that that he's missing. Loss is very familiar to him. We were his 5th set of parents. And so for him, like people just disappearing and you never seeing them again is a norm. So I think to some extent he understood that, but he was very quick to just change the conversation and talk about something completely different, which I think he usually does when it's too much, something's too much for him. It seemed to me that he understood it. You know, that he understood that then nobody, he's just somewhere that nobody knows where he is, you know, kind of like when your tablet is missing and it has to be found. But he hasn't asked since that date. He stopped asking, when is Skylar coming? Can you call Skylar?
There's also another child in Skylar's life who misses him as well, and that's his son. Sandra stays in touch with her grandson's mother. And she told us about her special relationship with him.
I mean, they're twins. Cartman is definitely Skylar's mini-me. Oh, gosh, yeah. He's perfect. He just turned 6, and he is so very smart, and his personality is a lot like his dad's when he was little. He's just fun and silly and likes to tell jokes, and he's just the greatest thing ever. So I had to go home for a funeral a couple months back, and I saw him, and I FaceTime with him. I try to do it once a week. Sometimes, you know, it's a little bit longer, but yeah, we FaceTime. Despite his not-so-pleasant stuff, Skylar, he's pretty awesome. He has a great heart and would do anything for anyone, which is a lot of times what got him into trouble, because he was easily taken advantage of. But he's smart and funny, and when he got to see his son again, my grandson said to me, "Grandma, my dad has tattoos on his face." And I said, "I know, that's kind of weird, huh?" And he said, "Yeah, but Grandma, my dad is really funny." So he was just fun. You know, when the sober Skylar is amazing. He didn't think he was worthy of people helping him. Regardless of the bad stuff he did, he's still my baby.
So what happened to Skylar Ware? We've seen a lot of criticism in the missing persons community when it appears that a person's high-risk lifestyle could have led to their disappearance. And that's not always a fair assessment. But in Skylar's case, there are so many risk factors they're impossible to ignore. Did he owe someone money for drugs? Did he steal from someone who exacted revenge? Was there an accidental overdose and he simply hasn't been found? Or is it possible that Skylar took his own life, something that he had threatened to do in the past? Or could that rumor be true about him being with a guy named Chris who shot him? Skylar's story is one of caution. A young man who had everything at his fingertips in life, who was by all accounts highly intelligent, engaging, talented, and outgoing. But he lost everything to addiction and the lack of proper treatment of his mental health disorders. Despite having a network with the best resources and the opportunities to go to the best rehabilitation facilities, Skylar's behavior only escalated until his disappearance was all but inevitable. Skylar's story is not a reflection of those who raised him or treated him or supported him. It's a warning that this can happen to anyone, and perhaps Skylar was one more person who became the victim of an insufficient mental health care system that lets the people who need help the most fall through the cracks and return to self-medication via drug use. At the time of his disappearance, Skylar Ware was 25 years old. He has brown hair and brown eyes. He's approximately 5'9" tall and weighs around 160 pounds. Skylar has several distinguishing features, including tattoos on his face. He may be in need of medical attention. If you have any information about Skylar Ware's disappearance, you're urged to call the Kansas City Police Department at 816-234-5136. You can also call their TIPS hotline at 816-474-TIPS. Also, you can contact the Jackson County Sheriff's Office at 816-541-8017.
I only have like 3 or 4 regrets in life, and this is one, is not keeping track of or properly maintaining care of Carmen and understanding what's going on with him. He, from what I understand, is with Skylar's girlfriend, his ex-girlfriend, you know, Carmen's mom. Sandra keeps very close contact with Carmen. I don't. I've only seen Carmen, I think, twice. I think the only thing I would do differently is be present. Find a way to be present. Whether that's if I decided to move to Las Vegas and came back to Missouri every month and saw him, or flew him out to Las Vegas every month, that is having more of a presence in his life would have dramatically changed the outcome of his life. I guarantee you. And I was not. And that's one of the major regrets I have. For parents who are, and parents are gonna, you're gonna have some listeners that are present. And if they are, it's just an encouragement to be mindful, you know, not to be investigatory and to, you know, be snooping, but just to be present and active in your child's life, you know, and engage them in those activities that are meaningful and purposeful. Because if you're not doing that, then the child doesn't feel like they're inclusive. You know, they somewhat feel abandoned. And I think when it comes to that point, then we start losing them.
That brings us to the end of episode 279. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be covering a case from Oregon. Thanks for listening.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.